This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
What a weekend of NCAA tournament basketball, culminating in 15 of the top 16 teams in America advancing to the Sweet 16, and the Oregon Ducks in there for good measure, who have been hot down the stretch, but still haven't been one of the 16 best teams in America. Day started off for me pretty simple. I woke up in my hotel room yesterday in Las Vegas. I don't know about you guys, but I would rather watch big games by myself. I understand there are some of you out there listening right now, but if my team has a big game, some of you out there right now, when your team has a big game, you want to be out in a crowd. You want to be at a sports bar. You want to be with your buddies, a bunch of you sitting around all watching the game together. I am the exact opposite. I want to be in front of a television, maybe with no one else around. Oftentimes, frankly, even with the sound off on the television, because I get annoyed by announcers who say self-evident and obvious things that I believe don't help my enjoyment of the game. A huge percentage of the time, when I watch a game that I really care about, and this will drive my wife crazy, she'll walk in and say, "Why do you have the sound off?" And the answer is because I want to totally focus on the images all by myself. So I am a University of Tennessee fan, born and raised, have been one my entire life. I wanted to watch their game against Iowa in my hotel room in Las Vegas by myself. I didn't want to be down on the casino floor in a sports book with hundreds of people all over the place. I didn't want to be down anywhere in a restaurant or a sports bar or anywhere else that I could have been where there would have been large crowds. I woke up early that morning, read some, got ready, 9:10 a.m. Pacific, boom, television's on, and I sat and watched it. First half couldn't have gone any better for my side. Tennessee was up 25, up 21 at the half, and then the wheels came off. When my oldest kid was young, we used to watch the Polar Express all the time. You've seen the movie The Polar Express. If you have kids and they like Christmas, you probably have. If you're a dad, if you're a mom, if you're a grandma, if you're a grandpa, aunt, uncle with young kids, nanny, you probably have seen The Polar Express. There is a scene, spoiler alert, in The Polar Express when the train comes down to cross over a river, and it goes off the tracks, and there is a frozen river with a train careening sideways on it. And you're not sure exactly what's going to happen, but it's kind of a epic disaster waiting to happen. That is what occurred when Tennessee was playing Iowa. It was a slow-moving train off the tracks, suddenly spinning on the ice moment as the 25-point lead went all the way down to zero and eventually went into overtime. I was beside myself. I was insanely nervous. Eventually, Tennessee put it all together and won the game. So I am flying back from Las Vegas then. I was lucky that my team was playing in the early game. So I get to the airport. I can kind of follow all the other games because of the way they now segment these games in the Sweet 16. They don't have a lot of games going on at once. So I'm in the air flying back from Las Vegas to Nashville, and I can watch CBS and I can watch the games as they're taking place. And when I land in Nashville, there is about 1.5 minutes to go in the Duke game against Central Florida. And so I'm walking through the airport looking for a television which will be airing the Duke game. And I find one. There's a restaurant called O'Charlie's. It's a southern restaurant kind of spread around a bunch of different places inside of the Nashville airport. And there are probably 40 people all piled together in the main concourse, not in the restaurant, but looking into the restaurant at one of their big flat screen televisions above the bar to see exactly what's going on. Everybody in that 40 is rooting against Duke. Every single person. It is a quintessential March Madness moment if you have ever been there and been in an airport on that opening Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday as an upset bid is brewing. It's sports fans just all jammed together, standing in a huge pile watching the television. And everybody is rooting for Central Florida to pull off the upset. Down the stretch in the final few seconds, Zion gets the ball. They are down three, Duke is. Spins, maybe charges with the first contact, goes inside on Taco Fall, gets the layup, gets fouled. Goes to the line. Everybody is losing their minds in that crowd of 40. Bunch of people are asking how Duke gets away with that call. How there's no offensive foul called on Zion. Zion steps to the line for the free throw. Iconic moment awaiting him. If he makes it, then Central Florida gets the ball and has an opportunity to win probably on the final shot of the game. But no, otherwise you go to overtime. If he misses it, UCF should be able to get the rebound. Duke's going to have to immediately foul. Best case scenario for the Blue Devils is Central Florida doesn't hit both free throws. Free throw is missed. Not a strong box out. And maybe a push in the back. Duke gets the rebound, lays it in, and then we get an improbable miss. A good runner hangs on the rim for a second, comes off. Duke gets an opportunity for a fall. UCF gets the opportunity for a follow. I have tweeted out the picture of the opportunity and the way the ball hangs on the rim. It is as agonizingly close to victory or defeat as you can get. Honestly, it's twice now Duke has had a win like this. They got the exact same kind of win against Wake Forest in their final home game of the year. Ball is on the rim, hanging there tremulously, pendulously, right on the edge. Victory or defeat, you don't know which way it's going to go, and it rolls off. That's how fine the line is between upset and failure, win and loss, agony and ecstasy. As Duke celebrates, the Central Florida fans sink down to their knees in total defeat, in awful, just awful loss. The crowd around me disperses. Everybody's upset. Everybody was rooting for Duke to lose because that's how we expend our energy in the NCAA tournament on the opening weekend. We root for Cinderella. We root for the slipper to fit. We root for chaos, for the little guy to upset the big guy. In the wake of that defeat, as they tried to come to grips with the loss, Central Florida walked into their locker room. Head coach Johnny Dawkins was there to address the team, and this is what it sounded like.
I'm just proud of you guys, man. I'm really proud because what you did this year, not just tonight, you did this year representing our program, representing our university. Couldn't be more proud of how you handled yourself on and off the court. And you guys have been terrific. And like I said, for us, we got a lot of good memories, man. A lot of good memories. We've accomplished a lot of amazing things this year. And I know that doesn't, you know, do anything for us right now. At some point in time, it will. And so, again, I know this is going to hurt. It's going to hurt for a while. I've been in it before and the same thing. But we're proud of you guys. We're proud of the effort and the energy that you gave us all year long. We always said, it's going to end two ways when you invest like we invest. It's going to end, man, celebrating. We're going to end crying. We're going to end in tears. We end in tears. That's because we invested, as I said before, so much in each other and so much in what we were doing.
Man, I loved what Johnny Dawkins said to his team there. And I think it is such an instructive lesson for so many of us out there starting off our Monday morning. How many of you invest so much in what you do, go after what you want with such full attack that when you fail, you feel like that? Most people don't do it. The NCAA tournament represents the best of America. It is everyone with an equal chance at winning, despite the fact that we are not all 100% equal. It's a fascinating thing about this country. We have embedded within our culture this idea, all men are created equal. But the way that we understand that is often misguided. It doesn't mean that we all have equal talent. It doesn't mean that the results are always going to reflect that everyone is exactly equal. It means that we all have, at this point in time, throughout the full fruition of American democracy, an equal chance at a championship. Unique in all of American sports, there is an opportunity to win a championship in basketball, college basketball in particular. If your team goes to their conference tournament and wins their conference tournament, they get a bid to the NCAA tournament. If your team then goes into the NCAA tournament and wins six straight games, it doesn't matter anything else. You are the national champion. Sometimes people talk about expanding the NCAA tournament. We've got 68 teams now. But really, if you include the conference tournaments the week before, 2 weeks before, every single college basketball team in America that plays D1, over 330 of them, has an opportunity to win the championship. And if you advance in the NCAA tournament that opening weekend, like these 16 teams did, you have achieved a high level of success. But more importantly, as you listen to that Central Florida locker room discussion, I want you to think about what Johnny Dawkins, former Duke player, former Duke assistant, said to his team. How much do you invest in? How hard do you work for anything? Most people, the answer is you don't invest that much and you don't invest that hard. Because going all in is difficult. And one reason why I love sports so much is it teaches us what I think is the most enduring and important trait of all of American life: how to fail, how to fall, and get back up again. Ultimately, that is the lesson of sports. And that is the overriding reason why America as a nation has succeeded, more so than any in the history of the world. Because our country embraces the idea that failure does not define us. If you think about the history of the world, if you study it, much of world history was about being on the side that doesn't fail. Even in Europe, where rights burgeoned, if you started a business and you failed and you went bankrupt, do you know what they did? They put you in debtor prison. If you owed too much money, you had to go to prison. There's still a part of old world democracy that believes that failure represents an eternal brand on your identity. You know what happens in America if you fail? Especially today, people believe that you learned something and will not fail when given the opportunity another time. It's the very ethos that defines Silicon Valley right now. Tell me about the company you started that failed. Why did it fail? Let me give you an opportunity to have learned from that and go start another company. Basketball comes down to a single play so many times when teams are good or bad. When they look and stare victory or defeat in the eye. One shot, rising up, ball in the air as the clock strikes zero. None of us know which way it's going to go. But ultimately, what matters is not whether the shot is in or out in the grand scheme of things. It's how you respond to victory or defeat. Victory is easy to handle. It's a great feeling. Anybody who's ever played sports has been there before. But you learn way more in defeat. Being crushed like those Central Florida kids are, which 67 of the 68 teams that enter into the NCAA tournament are going to feel. They all believe desperately that they have a chance to win a championship. And as many of them as invest as possible, they're all going to end in locker rooms very frequently like that one we just heard. But what defines this country and what has led us to the place where we are today as the most successful country in the history of the world is how we respond to that defeat. How many times we can get up when we fail, and how many times we can make ourselves go to that next day, to that next horizon, how much more we can continue to crave success even in the face of defeat. And that, to me, is what makes the NCAA tournament so uniquely American and why so many of you listening to me in all 50 states right now love this tournament so desperately. It's not just me, guys. The NCAA tournament this year has set a 28-year record for most viewership. The last time as many people were watching the NCAA tournament was 1991. You get that empty bracket, you fill it out. I remember 1991 well. Some of you are old enough to remember it well, too. It's Christian Laettner, Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, was Stacey Augmon, was Larry Johnson, it was Greg Anthony, UNLV defending national champs, the Running Rebels going up against Duke, the blue-blooded elite aristocracy of college basketball. Was an incredible year defined by their semifinal matchup of the rematch between Duke that had been whipped in 1990 by UNLV and 1991, Duke gets its revenge, and all of us were watching. I remember that well because 1990 was the first year I ever won a bracket challenge. My kids, you know what they said? Dad, can we fill out a bracket? They're 11 and they're 8. They'll be filling out brackets for the rest of their lives. You probably filled out a bracket as well. When you get that bracket, that pristine 68 team representation, you think to yourself, I'm going to be perfect. I'm going to fill out this bracket perfectly. And there's that moment as you fill out the bracket where anything truly feels possible. And that, to me, is why the NCAA tournament connects so well with so many people of all different backgrounds. It's a huge collection of people standing there rooting against Duke, rooting for Central Florida in that airport terminal. And if you were traveling like I was on Sunday, it's a good chance you felt the same way and saw the same emotion. And if you weren't traveling yesterday, you probably have seen this before. A ton of people who otherwise would have never been brought together, all standing together watching a college basketball game. I absolutely love what the NCAA tournament represents. I love everything about its reflection of the larger country. And I love everything that I heard in that Central Florida locker room.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis. Weeknights at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
want to bring in the crew. What was the best game you watched this weekend? I ran through the five that I thought were the best over the course of all 48 games. In no particular order, although I think it was the best. Duke, Central Florida, Wofford, Kentucky, LSU, Maryland, Auburn, New Mexico State, Tennessee, Iowa. All of them coming down the stretch, pretty scintillating viewing. What about you guys? What did you think was the best? Eddie, I'll start with you, Danny.
I would say Duke versus UCF. Because even though so many of us have Duke either in the Final Four or winning the whole thing, you couldn't help but root for UCF. And especially the coach's son dropping 32 the way he did and then having a chance there at the very end after Taylor drove to the hoop. And Zion, he stepped up. I tweeted, all right, it's time for Zion to take over right now. And then that's when he immediately, a minute later, drove to the hoop and had that potential three-point play. So just the back and forth and the fact that UCF rose to the occasion, it was hard not to root for them, even though I wanted Duke to prevail in the end.
This is the chalkiest bracket since 2009. All three top three seeds still alive. That's 12 teams. 2-4 seeds, a 5 seed, and Oregon, who has been playing a lot better down the stretch. What did you think was the best game, Eddie Garcia?
Yeah, I've got to go Duke, UCF as well. You had the great storylines going into it with Johnny Dawkins going up against his old coach and his old team, and UCF playing so well. And then in the very end, the big guns coming up big for Duke, a dramatic finish. That had it all.
Yeah, Dub, are you also on board? I mean, I think it may be tough to beat Duke UCF in terms of the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday games.
Yeah, I mean, that was an unbelievable game, and that last putback shot, how did that not go in? But I will say that Auburn New Mexico State game had me literally on my knees. I mean, Auburn did everything they could to lose that game and somehow still came out on top.
Yeah, Auburn had the ball up 7 with a minute to go and turned it over there. And we'll ask Bruce Pearl about this in the next hour, what his reaction was if he went back and watched that tape. Ends up giving up a corner three that was as wide open of a shot you could possibly get. Pretty wild. Roberto, were you rooting for Duke or against Duke? Was anybody rooting for Duke?
I was rooting against Duke, of course.
Television network executives clearly rooting for Duke. I felt like you could hear them wailing. And I'll ask everybody this when we come back. Did you think, but I'll ask you this already, Roberto, did you think that that there should have been any fouls called on Duke down the stretch? I mean, did Zion charge on the first defender in particular? And was that a push in the back?
I don't think so, because there was one play where Zion went up for a basket and he was fouled by Taco, and then it wasn't called. So I think it was both ways. The referee were going both ways there towards the end.
I do think that college basketball officiating, I know we talk a lot about officiating in general, and I think that's natural when you have big games with close outcomes. I think college basketball officiating is excruciatingly bad. And I think if you watch a lot of college basketball, you know what I'm saying. And I don't mean it like one side or the other benefits. I mean, there's just a lot of really bad calls. I almost lost my mind late when in the Tennessee-Iowa game, if you were watching that game, Tennessee blocks a shot clearly. The official who's closest clearly makes the blocked shot sign. Another official comes running over. Tennessee was going to have a dunk to go up 5 with about 2 minutes to go. Instead, the foul call is made, and Iowa gets 3 free throws to tie the game. I almost lost my mind right then and there. But those kind of calls, clearly wrong calls, happen all the time. I don't think it's intentional or anything like that. I think that most college basketball officials just aren't very good.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Bring in at Coach Bruce Pearl. You can find him on Twitter there. It's easy, at Coach Bruce Pearl. Just tweeted out a link to his Twitter handle as well. Sweet 16 again. What did you think of the way your team looked against Kansas, Coach? Thanks for getting up early with us.
Yeah, no, good to be with you this morning, Clay. Well, first of all, when you're preparing to play to go to the Sweet 16, there's a lot at stake. But more than anything, when you're playing against a Hall of Fame coach like Bill Self and a program like Kansas, one of the winningest programs in college basketball history, it really is an honor to be on the same floor with them and have an opportunity to compete against them. Clay, this year we have a better basketball team than Kansas. This has just not been one of Bill's best teams. They started the season preseason number one. They lost Udoka, a dominating big guy. LaJarrell Vick was their best shooter. He's not with the team. That just took them down a couple of notches to where we were in a position where we could be the better basketball team. And we played on Saturday some of the prettiest basketball that we played all year long, scoring 51 points in the first half, knocking down a bunch of threes, and got ourselves a real sizable lead and on to the Sweet 16.
When you look, and I know it's exciting to make the Sweet 16, but it's also exciting to prep for a game in the Sweet 16, and you're drawing UNC now. So as if it weren't enough of a blue blood that you just beat Kansas, now you're going up against UNC. What do you see in North Carolina so far that makes them so good?
You know, like preparing for Bill Self, when you prepare for a Hall of Fame coach and a Hall of Fame program, they do what they do. I mean, it is what it is. It's not rocket science. It is solid. It is fundamental. You know, Roy Williams' team are probably historically the best fast-breaking transition secondary basketball team in the history of college basketball. I mean, Roy Williams' teams have always played so well, so fast, with their fast break and their spacing and their secondary. And so if you interview somebody 10 years ago and they say, what's the best way to beat North Carolina? Well, you got to stop them in transition. That's it. I mean, that's the key, one of the keys. They just do a great job with that. Well, obviously easier said than done. Here we sit Monday morning. You know, we traveled back yesterday. They won yesterday afternoon. I worked on it a little bit last night, you know, so we don't have much of a game plan in yet. I do know they're a talented team. They're a hungry team. They were a really good team in the ACC, but they're dangerous because they didn't win the tournament and they didn't win their league, and they're four games winning for another national championship.
Take us into the process, because there's a lot of people out there getting ready for this Sweet 16, and there are a lot of good teams. What is your process? You've been to the Sweet 16 a bunch of times. How do you spend your time effectively, and what do you do to get your team ready? You know, when is the game plan officially in place? When do you meet with them? Like, I'm just genuinely curious about the week's kind of preparation as you get ready for this game.
Well, Clay, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I think the biggest thing is routine. Keep the guys on their schedule. Life's going to change this week for my basketball players. We're going to get more attention, more notoriety, more coverage than any time during the course of the season. The social media aspects of things, they're going to read more about themselves. And so number one is to keep our heads screwed on straight. When we got back last night from Utah, we had a great reception from our fans, but we didn't come back with nets. We didn't come back with a championship. We came back with two wins on the road to the Final Four, trying to get a total of six wins. So this is not the time to celebrate right now. Let's feel good about what we've done. So routine. So, you know, today we'll meet at 2:30. We'll watch film of North Carolina. We will have a pretty good discussion about what we need to mentally focus on. We'll get a lift in, and I'm going to get them some shots. That's it. We don't play till Friday. So in many ways, today's going to feel a little bit like a true day off, because yesterday they traveled. Tuesday, we will have a hard contact practice. We'll get after it. We'll do the best job we can Tuesday to play North Carolina as best we can by ourselves. We'll travel Wednesday, get to the arena, get some shots. Thursday's the day before the game, and we go Friday night.
How do you also prepare for the bridge? Let's say that you're able to win. I'm not talking just specifically about UNC, but you know you're playing, I know you're big on this, a four-team tournament every weekend,
yep.
And the goal is to be the one that advances. it's a quick turnaround if you were to win. You'll play against Kentucky, who I think you probably know pretty well, and Houston. How do you also prepare for those other teams in the event that you win in this kind of four-team tournament that you got left?
Yeah, that's a great question. So since Tuesday will be our live contact practice, if anybody in this field does anything unusual, something you don't see all the time, like a triangle and two or a 1-3-1 zone or something defensively regarding some sort of an overplay that we haven't seen all year long, then we will spend Tuesday, a little bit of time Tuesday, attacking that. I won't necessarily tell the team, look, this is North Carolina, but we need to work and prep on something. Short of that, we'll do nothing Tuesday with the kids that says anything other than North Carolina. The second thing, I've got three assistants. They each lead a team of scouts, operations guys, managers, graduate assistants. Each one of those groups is preparing for an opponent. I will work with the team that's preparing for North Carolina. I think my son Steven has got the Kentucky team, and one of my other assistants has got Houston. And so they will completely prepare like we're going to play, but I won't. I will not look ahead. I've got to get my arms completely around North Carolina, and I won't let the team look ahead either.
There are a lot of really good teams left in the NCAA tournament. When you are in the tournament, how many other games have you seen part of during the course of March Madness, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? I have no idea. I mean, I know you probably have. Like, did you see the end of the Duke game? Like, do you yeah. see any other of the games that are going on? Or are you so silo-focused on your own game that it's like the rest of the world doesn't even matter?
Well, I don't know what's going on in the world right now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I do know what's going on in college basketball. So Saturday was a long day. We didn't play to the last game. So you could only do so much prep for Kansas. You know, my good friend and former coach at Iowa, our football coach Hayden Fry, used to say, Hayes and Bart, it's time to eat. You know, our prep's done. We're ready to go. We got to go play. So I didn't do a ton on Saturday other than just a couple hours of relaxation, and I did watch some games Saturday. Last night came back and did kind of catch the Duke game. I watched Texas Tech a little bit, just the games that were on a little bit. And that Duke game was a classic. It's a classic survive and advance game.
So when you have been in the Sweet 16 a bunch of times, we played the audio, and I don't know if you've heard it from Central Florida in the locker room after the game. What's the toughest locker room you've ever had to go into as a coach?
That's another great question. It's clear. It's easy. 1994, Springfield, Massachusetts. We lost in the national championship game, Division II, Southern Indiana, versus Cal State Bakersfield. And that was a tough locker room. The guys were all in tears. And my son, Steven, who was probably, I can actually get this right, I don't even know. Steven was maybe 10 years old. And one of my players led us in a prayer. And he, in prayer, he was talking to God in the first person singular. He was having a conversation with God in his prayer. And I don't think Stephen had seen that a lot. And it was wonderful. He asked questions about it. And I think that was a very, very special moment. And it really eased our pain because, look, we trust the Lord. His plan. Thank you for the blessings for getting us this far. And, it was really a sweet moment.
We're talking to Auburn men's basketball coach Bruce Pearl. What's the game, as you now look in the Sweet 16, that you wish in your coaching career you could go back and recoach? Is there any, when you sit back, and I know you're still rolling this year, But I always like to think about, you know, the past and everything else and how you can learn from it. Is there any game in your career that you ever think, I wish I could go back and re-coach this game. We should have won, or I would change something. Is there one in the back of your mind that you think like this?
Yeah.
You know, there's one that you think about. Is there one for coaches that you think about?
Oh, yeah. 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 So I don't remember what year it was, but it's Tennessee, Ohio State, and we're playing Michael Conley, Greg Oden, and an Ohio State Buckeye team that got the national championship game against Florida and lost to Florida for the championship. And we're in San Antonio. Clay, we've got an eight. You got to remember this.
Oh, I watched this game. I remember it well. Yeah.
All right. And so we have an 18-point halftime lead against Ohio State. In fact, we set a record. We made 18 threes in that game, and I think we made 10 or 11 in the first half. Played great basketball. Second half, Ohio State, I believe, made 29 free throws. I think they made 29 free throws.
Yeah.
Not shot. I think they made them. We lost the game. I would have trapped Conley and Oden somehow in the middle of the ball screen and not let Conley beat us. And he just got in that middle ball screen. He drove downhill, and I think he and we just sent him to the foul line. We weren't able to stay in front of him. Now, Michael Conley, pretty good NBA point guard for the Memphis Grizzlies, and still playing and still haunting me. Thank you so much, Clay Travis, for the question. Like, I needed that right now. Okay, starting my Monday morning off, I needed that question.
I went on Twitter and said that whatever needs to happen, CBS, TBS, Turner, however they decide, TNT, who calls games, I'm not even sure what network you guys are going to be on, that they need to call an audible, and they need Charles Barkley, and they need Kenny Smith, UNC guy, Auburn guy, to call this game. Great idea or even greater idea?
It's a great idea, except the problem is the kids would not get any of the coverage because they wouldn't be talking about the game. I mean, I have no idea what they'd be talking about. If Chuck did the game, as long as he didn't do it in his Chuck-cito. That's just not a look I'm interested in seeing, like, up close and personal. Those guys are clearly going to have some fun in the studio. They both take it seriously. They both care a great deal. So, I would think, like, of all the games that we've played so far, I would think beating Carolina or beating Kenny Smith, that could be Charles's national championship. Because look, Chuck's always sort of been the underdog. And Kenny, you know, he went to North Carolina. I mean, he was an elite guard his entire career, high school, college, even as a really good pro. And Chuck was sort of from Leeds, Alabama, and may have grown up the hard way.
Last question for you. Your team has won 10 in a row. And I know putting an exact finger on why that's happened sometimes is tough for a coach. Why is your team surging at the exact right time? What is that particular chemistry that has all come together that's allowed you guys to be rolling like you are right now?
Coaches can help teams win game. Players win championships. It's that simple. When the players are bought into the process, trusting each other, relying on each other, not jealous of another man's success, no longer trying to carve out their own role. Their role has been carved out throughout the season. Going to their strengths, staying away from their weaknesses, that's when it starts to really come together. And that's what happened to us this year. You try throughout the seasons to make it happen. It happened for us a year ago during the regular season, when we got into SEC play and they picked us 4-14 in the league to start the season. And we knew we were better than that. And the players, more than anything else, decided. Now, my job is to help guide them. But it's their job to ultimately look. I could call timeout, change defenses, make a play call. But there's nothing more valuable when the guys look at each other and say, we're going to get three stops in a row right now. Not the coach, but the players.
Coach, we'll be watching. We'll be rooting for you on Friday. Good luck, and I can't wait to see what happens.
All right, Clay. You guys have a great week.
That is Bruce Pearl at Coach Bruce Pearl on Twitter.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app. L.A. Broad.
I got.
From the first show in the country to predict hashtag future Laker. Instead of 3 hours of it, Clay Travis captures all the mania in 3 minutes.
LeBron has picked up the circus tent, and it has followed him wherever he has gone. I got to be honest with y'all. I thought we were going to be doing L.A. Bron into April, into May, into June, all planned out. Instead, it's over, and we still got a week left in March. Danny G, are you crying like the UCF team was in the locker room?
Nah. Laker fans have had a few weeks now to take this all in.
But you said you weren't going to say it was all done until it was officially done. Well, it officially died over the weekend.
Lakers switched to quit trying for Zion weeks ago.
Hashtag future Lakers.
Yes. Zion next to LeBron. That's going to be sweet. LeBron and Kuzma did combine for 58 points last night in their win over the Kings, Clay. At the Staples Center, the Lakers are winners, 19-17 on the year in L.A. Tuesday night, the Lakers host the Wizards. Another,
but I think it's
I hope
fair
that's
to
another
say,
loss, though, because W. The Lakers actually have a 4.3% chance now of getting the number one draft pick.
How stunning is it that L.A. Bron comes to a close and dies with a whimper like this? After all the excitement, after all the enthusiasm about LeBron to the Lakers, it's not even April. Like, we haven't even gotten to the Sweet 16 games yet in college basketball. And we're dead here. When's the official start of the NBA postseason? I know there's about 10 games left, depending on the team, 8 to 10 games.
Who knows? We're all watching college basketball.
Right, but I mean, to have LeBron be done before college basketball is even done with the Sweet 16
I mean,
is pretty wild.
You said it yourself, though. There was some excitement around Christmas time, but then the injury happened to LeBron. The injury happened to Lonzo, and then all the Anthony Davis drama popped off, and at that point, it all went downhill.
What do you think LeBron's going to do with all these extra months now where he's not playing basketball?
Finally, making movies.
Finally rest. He'll produce some shows, too, like the one that was on TV last night, that Chase for $1 million.
Yeah, how was that? I didn't watch it.
I didn't see it either. I don't like shows like that, to be honest with you.
Stupid.
I mean, any American Ninja Warrior type show, I'm not really going to pay attention to that on TV, especially during the tournament. But I will say this. For 8 straight NBA Finals appearances, that's a lot of wear and tear. I mean, you just heard Marvez talking about the wear and tear on Gronk because of all the postseason action he had. But nobody wants to give LeBron any sort of pass whatsoever about all the mileage on his legs the past decade.
Well, I think it's because, and this is why I think NCAA ratings are up. I mean, I think it's because NBA guys take a lot of games off even while they're playing in the regular season. It's why I think it's almost impossible, and I've paid a lot of attention to it this year, it's almost impossible to bet regular season NBA basketball just because you don't know the kind of effort that you're going to get from a team. I mean, the Warriors are a perfect example. They finally got to 50 wins, but it doesn't seem like they even really care about having home court advantage, and they're just waiting for the regular season to be done. And the fact that we've debuted a new phrase called load management in the NBA this season, and it is not good for the overall brand. But the brand of NCAA basketball is strong, 28-year television ratings high. I think what you see in this age of so much hyper-selling, right? There's so many options out there. It's easy to watch Hulu or Netflix or the WWE or any of these Amazon major companies, not even counting all the regular television that's on. And I think what happens is we see a flight to quality. And by flight to quality, I mean you remember the history of the NCAA tournament. You know it's good. and you go back when there's a lot of options, sometimes you fall back on the tried and true options you know you're going to like. And I think that's what we're seeing with viewers, even though the games overall were not outstanding. And, you know, I ran through six games probably of the 48 that were really worth watching. Yet people tuned in and watched in high levels. Now, partly I think that's probably gambling becoming a more prevalent part of sports gambling. A lot of these games came down to final possessions, final points for over-unders, point totals, and everything else. But we'll continue to break this down. Encourage you to go download the podcast. Bruce Pearl in Hour 2 was fantastic. Alex Marvez in Hour 3 was as well. Good night, Laker fans. Your sweet prince, his playoff quest is over.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis. Weeknights at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.